If I could take the pain back a few years, but not have seen what the reward could potentially be, I think it would be a much closer answer. Like you'd be pushing much thinner equity from a life equity perspective.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Spit it out.
I'm now brown cow.
Right? Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Humanity of Trading podcast. My name is Kyle, and I'll be handling MC duties for today's host and series creator, Cleo. We've got another familiar face in the hot seat this week as Flary's finally agreed to take a turn. I say finally, like I haven't been the one to not get you scheduled.
It's totally my fault. I'm not going to do it. All right, fine. I'll do it.
And Flair's on the podcast like every week anyway, not this mini series though.
I've had plenty of opportunities to ask him. So Flair, are you ready to get to know your inner woo?
I think so. I don't know. It sounds a little scary. I have a couch behind me if I need to lay on it. If that's going to be like a better
interesting
vibe. I hope it. No, because I don't think we're qualified to.
Like a qualified. True couch session.
I think we're better off being the ones on the couch, personally. Yeah. Before we get going, though, I want to just say a couple things to you, Flary. Just how grateful I am for all the time, all the help that you volunteered to me personally and to multiple members of our community. Like, I don't know that I've ever come out and actually like said like thank you and given you like the props that you deserve, but this seems like the appropriate place to get that out of the way.
I appreciate that. I like teaching, man. And sharing. It's the kitchen in me, you know.
It's not just that though. I mean, I'm talking about more than just the trading side of things.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about, Kyle? Let's get specific.
One of the first vacations I got to take was going to see some family in Michigan. I think you actually covered so I could take that trip. You covered for me back in the Two Bulls days.
I remember that.
So like things like that, man. Things like that you've done for us over the years. It's been great, dude. I'm glad to have met you, glad to know you, and hope that reflect on this like in another 5 years from now.
Yeah, more to come, right?
Yeah.
I mean, also you've been showing up with Baba and like the storm stuff. I don't know exactly all of that, but I've gotten little snippets. I'm like, what is Flary actually doing? Wait, is he sending like pallets of stuff? Like what's happening?
Yeah.
Like you've really been showing up and on a very deeply personal level in this crisis. And I actually want to know more specifically, like what have you been doing with that?
I mean, I honestly take almost no credit for it, except for just connecting to people that have resources or are, you know, in Baba's case, like boots on the ground. Baba had a need. I have a friend and a business partner that, you know, has resources in that area. And I just simply connected them. You know, it was a relatively small footprint as far as like cost goes. So there was a lot of volunteer stuff and things like that. So, I mean, you guys are friends. You know, yeah, trading is kind of our bond and, you know, some of this content creation things and things like that. But, you know, I mean, I would consider this group of people the kind of folks that if they call and need something, you know, the phone gets answered and the answer is always yes. So, you know, I mean, something as serious as like what, you know, the images and the, you know, just like the conversations I had with Baba around, you know, just what was impacting his family. And then you see him just immediately like making sure his ship was right and then going out and helping neighbors and family and all the things like.
So inspiring.
I have a big heart for that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, just giving back to the community, friends and family. It's just, it's just kind of part of the DNA.
Nice.
It really was such a great moment too. I mean, and like, yeah, it feels like you didn't do much, but man, connecting those two people makes such a big difference.
It's essential, right?
Yeah.
Connections.
You know people that know people.
Yeah, it's almost like its own little asymmetric risk opportunity. Like it takes a little small ask and then you can make a big difference in somebody's life.
Yeah, one phone call. It's literally one phone call and it's still kind of going. So, You know, and it's funny because it's like the guy I called, he's like, oh yeah, we do that all the time. Like, where's it going? Oh, we actually would love to get some help down there. It's so hard if you don't have the connection, because they would love to help, but they can't actually just drive a semi down there because no one would let them get through and all the things that we had to do. So Baba had to do all the things that he did in order to make it even possible for the resources to be able to get to them. So it's funny how, like, if you don't have those two people that need that connection, you know, stuff like that just is like hard.
And both of those two people, especially your resource, obviously trusts you, right? Which says something about you too, right? It's not just some random person saying like, hey, can you help with this thing? It's like,
can you send a semi truck of goods to, to Carolina
somewhere? You've nurtured that connection to such a degree that they would trust a referral that you have, which speaks highly of you.
You guys are pumping tires here. Is this?
Yeah. It's the first half.
Half, right? When the dark side comes out soon.
Can we hear just maybe like the origin story of Flary? I think because we've heard like the, you know, the words, like what it means, like together we flourish, I think is the phrase, right? Mm-hmm. But like, where did that come from? Like, how did that become like your moniker?
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of a similar-ish story. So Anut Flary is together we flourish. Flary is Haitian Creole for flourish. And this is probably going on like 7 or 8 years ago, maybe slightly longer. I partnered with a local organization called Healing Haiti, and they were doing mission trips through different churches and things like that, where you just go to Haiti by paying a fee and like your airfare and all that stuff. That helped basically fund the organization. So like, it's almost like a vacation to go serve kind of model. You know, they have a really nice house in country that's kind of away from some of the more impoverished areas, but still, you know, kind of in Haiti. And so you would go and you would like, you know, for 7 days, each day you would do something different. So you would go to an orphanage and, you know, you go to like Mother Teresa's, you would do a water truck day, which was like the best. You go into City Soleil. They had their own old milk tanker. They would fill it with water. So like your money to go down there would pay for that, like, you know, tanker of water. And you would literally drive a tanker of water into what is like the poorest city in the world, City Soleil. And, you know, unfortunately, like the children, they're called Rustavik children. It's like loosely translated to kind of like a version of a slave. But what happens is families that can't afford to take care of their children give their children to someone who can. And a lot of times those children end up having to do like, you know, like a lot of chores, we'll just say.
Yeah.
And so picking up water was one of those things. And so you would go with this huge tanker truck and all these kids would come running and like you would help them carry water as far as, you know, kind of allowed to. And so anyways, through all of that, the organization had its own school and orphanage called Grace Church and Grace Orphanage in a city called Titanier, which literally translates to Forgotten City. Out in the mountains, very, very, you know, like rural, but like, you know, poor, impoverished. Yeah. And I was touring the facility and there was wood burning pizza ovens and all of these like dust covered kitchen racks, rolling racks. And I'm, you know, I'm a chef, right? So I'm like, what's going on here? And they're like, well, this was, you know, an organization came out, they built these pizza ovens and we had this vision that one day a chef would come and, you know, would help us start this restaurant and this bakery. But, you know, for now, it's just kind of sitting here collecting dust. And I was like, I'm your chef. And they were like, no, you'd have to email this guy. And I was like, no, I'm your chef. I'm going to start this for you. Who do I need to email? Like, I'm going to do this. And the lady was just kind of like, yeah, okay, you know, whatever. I'm like, no, just like, seriously, give me the email. So she gave me the guy's email. His name was Mike. As soon as I got back to the country, stateside, I emailed him. And, you know, over the course of the next like year, I joined a team that then started because they had their chef now. And we designed from literally the dirt up a kitchen, a full commercial kitchen, bakery and restaurant. And the restaurant was a pizzeria, which ultimately got named Flary. And so I loved the sort of story behind like, you know, together we flourish. And so we would have pre-shift meetings and they would do like a group prayer. And at the end of it, we'd kind of cheer like, Anut Flary, like together we flourish. And I just loved that. And I just think like bringing that you know, sort of like mindset or mantra into trading made a lot of sense. Like, especially, you know, like Band of Traders, right? Like it's just, you can find yourself on such an island and trading and in your own headspace and having a good pod of people to sort of like be raw with and honest with and share the good and the bad, you know, kind of made a lot of sense. So Together We Flourish, or Flurry, kind of became the moniker. When first of all, I realized when you joined Discord that you need one. And well, it was Twitter at the time, but you know, X now. I was like, well, what's my handle going to be? And I was like, oh, Flurry, here we go. So that's the story of Flurry.
There's a moment you kind of started to share on one of the podcasts that we did, the regular roundtables, talking about like a moment you had with your son where you were looking through some of those old pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember you telling us like you were like marking out the footprint of the kitchen, like with your shoes, like in actual like dirt.
In the dirt. Stepping it out and like when it was just a vision. And I always wanted to and still would love to bring my kids back to the country. One, to have them experience the way you see other people live like that and just the reality check that it can do for you. I think it's, you know, with giving back, you almost always receive more than you give. It's like impossible to not. So one, I want that for them. But two, it just like would be really just cool for them to go see this thing that, you know, their dad built or helped build. And unfortunately, just the country is of Haiti has gotten not really safe enough for, you know, children anyways to travel. They used to do like father, son, daughter trips or like parent kid trips. But it's just not a thing in the current landscape there now. But yeah, so they've seen all the pictures and they love it. Their favorite one, we would do when the kitchen was built and I went down there to go train the staff and show them the recipes. We were doing R&D and I was staying at the orphanage up the hill. And it was literally up a hill.
Right.
And I would, at the end of the day, I would take pizzas for that day's like research and development batch. And I would bring it up to the kids because who best to tell me whether or not the pizza sucks than the kids. And there's goats that amongst other animals that just kind of roam. It's weird. Like if you had goats there, you don't need to have them in your own goat pen or on your farm. They just roam. And everyone knows like that's Kyle's goat. Don't
fuck with my goat. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't fuck with Kyle's goat. But anyways, the goats got to learn that every day I would walk up the hill with pizzas and they would follow me. So I had to start like taking slices of the pizza and like throw it because they would be nipping at my legs, at my pant legs, trying to get the pizza. But yeah, so that's like their favorite picture of like, I've got literally the pizza box and like my phone out and there's goats
chasing
me up the hill. Yeah, I'll have to find it. I'll send it to you.
That's awesome.
Well, I also want to know some about your trading history, like just some basic stuff, like how long have you been trading? You've probably said this a million times, but somehow I've missed it. So how long have you been trading and what's some of your evolution as a trader?
Yeah, I think like always interested in the stock market. My grandmother and grandpa on my mom's side, they always would talk about investing and they would do sort of this like friendly competition. I don't know how friendly it actually was, but it sounded friendly when they would tell me the story. But my grandfather would use an investor, like or whatever, like a fund manager, financial advisor, and he would tell him, okay, here's your, you know, every year they would start with like a fresh balance. It's called 100K, and he would put his 100K with the financial advisor, and they would, you know, buy stocks, and he could tell him how aggressive or not aggressive to be or whatever. And my grandma would do whatever she wanted to do. And so she was very big into, and I still remember her saying this all the time, was like dividend-based stocks. And so she would just like dollar cost average into dividend-based stocks. She would buy hot names and things like that. She actually probably has made much more money on Bitcoin than I ever have.
Wow.
Just based on, you know, like a Christmas family gathering where she was like, all right, fine, how much? Like, how many should I buy? And then she bought it at like 4K or something like that.
Oh my gosh. Good for her, man.
like after 2017, like that pullback. Yeah. Maybe it was like 6K or something
like that. Is she still alive?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. She is. My grandfather isn't, but she still invests her own money to this day. She's still like, you know, whenever I see her, is like, what do you think about this name? And like, we'll look at the chart and stuff like
that. She still has that Bitcoin?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. My hope is that someday I'll get it back in some weird way as like a gift, especially now that it's like 100 something K, but,
yeah.
But yeah, so I remember them always talking about that, and it like kind of sparked my interest enough where like I would look at charts and like then like sort of like passively invest in just like whatever names, like, and it was just like so rudimentary, like I'll buy Apple, I'll buy whatever, like really no anything like formal or no technical analysis, nothing, just like it's Tuesday, I'm gonna buy Apple.
I have $500. Then
today's the day I buy my. And I'm gonna own some stocks.
Yep.
And then Bitcoin.
It's not a bad strategy. You know?
No, it's probably better than most strategies. Yes. To be completely honest, buy blue chip stocks and forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark it down. Buy blue chip stocks. But yeah, it's sad because it's
that's
like
kind of what I'm doing these days. So
yeah, 95% of the traders would probably do better than most just doing that, but. Then like 2016 ish, like, Bitcoin before the big run up in 2017, there was some documentaries. It was like relatively cheap, like call it like $200 to $300. I think Ethereum was like ungodly cheap. It was ridiculous. And I remember there was like a Netflix or something like that documentary. I remember watching it and just being like, man, we should just buy some. Like, let's just buy a couple of grand. Like, who knows what happens with this thing? And through that process of like, okay, how do I onboard crypto? Like, that takes like, you know, forever, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. To then like, okay, what if I want to like, now there's altcoins and there's all these other things. And like, at the time, you know, you didn't have to use a VPN, but there was leverage trading on BitMEX. And I just remember opening up BitMEX and like there wasn't Coinbase Pro at the time. There was like Poloniex and some of these like exchanges. And that was my first real sort of like seeing a DOM, seeing an order book, like, okay, this is really interesting. Let me start like doing some research, reading books, like what is technical analysis? And that's like all the like 101 stuff that you like, we were just talking about the other day on the podcast that like, you know, day one, would probably focus a little bit more on some of that stuff versus like trying to get too advanced. But
ideally, that,
yeah, I mean, ideally, well, I mean, just find something simple.
How many traders have we talked to that go back to like the first thing they learned? It seems like whatever the first thing you learned is, it seems to be the thing that you kind of come back to.
It's typically like a more complicated version of it, but yes, like it's some simple concept with advanced, you know, subset of rules or whatever
journey that just leads you in a big old circle, right back where you started.
Old snake eating a snake kind of thing.
So that was in 2017 for you.
Yeah, 2017, you know, like messing around on BitMEX, you know, trading cryptocurrencies on leverage sometimes and just kind of like really experiencing some of those bigger moves and getting into like basic, you know, technical analysis and like no idea of order flow, didn't even know futures existed. And just through that, really developed a passion for charting and just absorbing as much information on markets as I could. And eventually like that just kind of stayed, and you know, my version of technical analysis at the time like kept kind of getting better and it was going well.
God, I wonder how many people start with crypto. Like I started with crypto too, and then eventually found futures. And I'm curious about that with traders, how common that is.
Did he start with crypto? Because it sounds like he started with buy and hold and stocks.
Well, you started with your grandparents, right. Really, but then when you got into it.
Trading, I mean, is when he's
trading. Trading
like
was crypto.
Some version of like swing or day trading, not buy and hold.
Yeah.
Was definitely with crypto. But yeah, I agree. I think it's like, and it's a relatively like the barrier of entry is like, how the heck do I onboard fiat money into cryptocurrency? And once you figure that out, you can kind of navigate wallets and stuff like that. It's, you know, then you're trading.
Is it just because it's like, I mean, besides that is the barrier to entry. It doesn't require like a ridiculous amount of like capital outlay. Like if you wanted to day trade stocks, you need 25K to sit in an account. If you want to trade futures, you need like 4K at least.
And that was another huge piece is like, you know, I mean, imagine, you know, day one you and you're like $25,000, which it's kind of funny because now that would be like, you know, not even close to enough, but you just like, you look at that hurdle and you're like, well, what the heck? I can only make 5 trades a week. Like this just does, like, this is not attainable until I can build something up in another way. And crypto, I think, gives a lot of people that opportunity. And then, you know, some of them just figure out that that's just a better opportunity. Those markets are less efficient or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, just that the passion grew from there. And then started to kind of discover some Discord, like FinTwit type stuff. Then futures trading kind of that sort of door was opened, and realized that, you know, there is no pattern day trading minimum amount, that there's this product called micros. Although I wish I would have focused more on micros in the beginning.
I'm glad that micros were a thing when I was started.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. I could have done without starting in like ES minis. I started as an ES trader, like price action only ES trader, like simple price action patterns. And yeah, through that like evolution, like worked my way into some version of order flow, advanced charting. And, you know, over the course of that period of time, like built this Frankenstein model of what I would call my process today. And a lot of it is just, you know, my own personal tweaks of someone else's system, some stuff that was like purely what I would say like raw generated alpha that like I just kind of found my own setups and inefficiencies through order flow and things like that. And yeah, I mean, today, like you were joking, like the goal is to kind of like then strip everything out that I've learned over like, you know, that whatever, 7-10 years, and just focus on the things that are actually paying rent and the, you know, like the stuff that I think like really deserves to be in my process. But that evolution was long and painful. You know, I mean, it really is. And, you know, that's why, you know, you kind of mentioned again earlier, like, you know, helping out on the training side. You know, I've got a younger kid that I'm sort of mentoring as well. And like, for me, it's about like, dude, you just can skip all of that part. Right. Like, you don't have to waste 2 years on that part. Like, just listen, fast forward, and then, you know, kind of move on with some of the like pitfalls.
Like, what would be an example of that part that you would tell him to move on from?
For sure, some of the content that's available, and it's even probably worse today than it was, you know, call it 5 to 7 years ago.
Yeah, there's almost too much content now to where
there's way too much content.
People can get stuck down rabbit holes.
The rabbit holes are way deeper now than they were. And to some extent, I would say like the hard part was finding the content, you know, say 5 to 7 years ago, or, you know, whatever, like the filtering wasn't as big of a problem. Today, I think the filtering the content is probably a larger challenge for new traders, you know, like the explosion of, you know, Discord rooms and things like that, and courses and all of the stuff. And there's really, really, really good, you know, furus, gurus, courses, all of that stuff out there. There is some great content in it. And even the bad content, I actually think there's like most of the bad content is good if you know how to then apply it correctly, either into your process or to backtest it and filter out the noise. Because the bad stuff is usually a good setup with cherry picked examples.
Right.
You just like what they don't tell you is how to skip the 60% of losing trades. They just show you the 40% of winning trades.
Right.
And then, you know, life is grand. But the reality of it is you go try to take every trade, you get slapped, you know, a bunch of times, and you lose your, you know, enthusiasm for it, and you move on to something new. And I think there's so much something new that you can find yourself in that perpetual cycle.
Oh, that's such a great point. Yeah. Yeah. You get stuck in that shiny syndrome where you just on to the next thing rather than just spending enough time to like, let's go ahead and like really analyze this one setup and learn like all the nuances of it. And if you would have spent the time doing that, probably would be a lot further along.
Like the opening range is a great example of that.
Yeah.
There's like, if you Google the ORB, it's funny. It wasn't even called ORB when I first started trying to find it. Like if you rewound like 3 to 5 years ago and you tried to find any information on the opening range, there was maybe like 2 or 3 resources. You were lucky if you stumbled upon PAX. And even when you did, like you had to do some serious work to dissect like how he looked at the opening range. He's much more open about like sharing some of the like targets and how he approaches those things without being behind his paywall. But like now you go on YouTube and you Google ORB and you'll get, you know,
so
200
videos.
Right.
And none of it tells you anything about how to actually implement that into like a process-based trade. And you know, again, I think that's probably the biggest hurdle is like, how do you filter the good from the bad these days? Because there's just so much content.
There's a couple things you've said in podcasts that I've heard you, Flary, when there's like people are talking about something that's hard or some piece of wisdom that you've come to or some conclusion about something trading related. And you say this thing, you say a couple things. You say, ask me how I know. That's one thing I've heard you say like 10 times. And then you also say this thing of, by the grace of God, go I.
Yeah, and by the grace of God, there go I.
There go I. And I've wanted to actually ask you about both of these things because they feel, they kind of occur as like, man, this guy has gotten his ass handed to him enough to have these two things that he says. Like, I just want to hear a little more about that. Like, when you all, when you say, like, ask me how I know, I want to say, like, okay, how do you know? What are what are you talking about? You know,
well, you're not like, wrong. Yeah. You're not wrong. It's typically from an ass kicking, but that I honestly can't take credit for. That's a saying from MT Macro Tactical, who has been on, you know, different versions or been guest on the podcast in some way, shape, or form, I'm sure.
Trying to get him back on for another just to talk about the California fires and what's going on out there, actually.
Oh, I love that. But so Macro, probably one of the most influential conversations I've ever had in my trading journey, like pod member to pod member. I was in a small group of traders, and he was in that group. And I was getting my butt kicked, just going through like a tough run. And I was skipping trades. I wasn't very confident. I would be on voice talking about like, I see A, B, and C, here we go. And then I wouldn't hit the button. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things he always would say and still does is like, see it, hit it. Like, you just have to have that see it, hit it mentality. Like, you can't be scared to take the work that you've worked on, like in your own process.
Right, honor
trades.
Your work. That's another thing
honor,
you say.
Yeah, honor your work.
Yeah.
And I remember like everyone dropped off a voice and it was just him and I. And he literally just like cold water to the face to me and was like, dude, how dare you? How dare you work so hard on all of this stuff? You have amazing talent. Like, you've worked so hard to create these setups. I literally hear you on voice talking through all of the things that are happening as they're happening. I don't even know. I'm not looking at the chart that you're looking at, but I know enough about you that you've done the work and that what you're saying is accurate. I click the button based on what you say and you won't even click the button. And, you know, so like through that, like that conversation, that like cold water, that see it, hit it mentality came from Macro. And, you know, again, like through those, through that relationship and just like a bunch of like raw conversations with him, like that, that like, ask me how I know is like, you know, you're scared to see, to hit your setup. Like, ask me how I know, like I've gone through that. I've had to have that conversation with somebody who had to tell me like, dude, stop not taking your trades. Like, what are you doing?
Well, what, here's a question for you just to interject here. Like, what were you doing? Like, why weren't you clicking the button? What was going on for you?
Well, I was scared. I was scared of the result. I was scared to be wrong in front of my peers.
Yeah.
Scared to lose money, scared to make money, honestly, in some weird way. You know, and just
like to like, take action, to just take any, to take the action that will end up in a result of more or less.
When you take the action, then it makes the result real. It makes it finite. Like, you have the hope that this is the setup that will make you $1 million if you don't actually like follow through and find out if it actually is. It's a lottery ticket.
Well, and there's so many versions of failure. Like, you could take the trade and find out that your work sucks.
Right.
You could take the trade and lose money and that could be detrimental. You could take the trade and make money that you probably shouldn't have made because you didn't manage the trade correctly. There's so many versions of like, once I click this button, you know, bad things can happen short of just like, I had a green trade.
Plus the social dynamics, right? What's the impact if you win on the other people that are there or if you lose, right? There's that extra layer.
Yeah, and you know, they thought it was a short, I thought it was a long, so I didn't want to say anything. And like, I let them influence me. And you know, like a side thing, but like trading in a group is very hard. Like, I think it's a skill set that isn't talked about a ton, that probably drags a lot of people down. You have to trust that person, you have to know them, you have to respect their work enough to like figure out where in your process, like Kyle says it's a short, but I say it's a long. Like, what does that do to my execution?
That's been a tricky thing for me to work through, like being on voice with Baba every day.
Yeah, you guys trade on voice all the time. And it's not, that's honestly why I've kind of gotten away from a lot of that. Like, the group of people that are ever in my headphones is very small and I know exactly what they're doing. A lot of times we're doing the same things and, and that's by design. But yeah, that, to get back to the ask me how I know, it's conversations with Macro and like the ask me how I know is just like, dude, I've done this. Like, you know, just, you don't have to do that too. just trust me. Like, or it's not an uncommon thing. Like, you're not on an island with that problem. Like, everybody blows an account. Everybody takes trades they weren't supposed to. Everybody gets bored and takes C setups. Everybody cuts their winners too early. Everybody moves their stop. Like, ask me how I know. It's just not an uncommon problem. And the reason I think we say it to each other is because I think what a trader will do is then go have a mirror moment after that. You'll get outside of your process and you'll lose more than you wanted to, or miss out on a big winner or whatever. And then you'll go sit in the mirror and go, you're an idiot. Why did we who is this person that's clicking buttons? And those are tough conversations to have with yourself. And probably one of, again, like the harder part of trading is like that emotional inner challenge, you versus you part of trading.
Yeah.
And the ask me how I know is to be like, hey, dude, you don't have to go have that conversation with yourself, because I've had it too. And so you're not on an island with
Here's
that.
The result of that conversation. I'll skip you that process.
I'll just tell you how stupid you are. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm that dumb too, right? And if I can get over it or am still struggling with it, you know, it's okay that you are. It's kind of like a bit of a pass to like not beat yourself up so much about something that's like common to everybody. So that's ask me how I know.
I love that, because it's like, stop beating yourself up for it and take a moment and learn something from it. Like, everybody goes through these moments. These are the moments that we need to learn from. Like, stop feeling sorry for yourself and go learn. Go learn the damn lesson.
Yeah, be honest with yourself. Yeah. Don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, 100%. Was it so by the grace of God, there go I is like just a good scripture. And that's always just resonated with me. But I just love that, because it's like, you know, whatever my preacher version of like, what does that scripture mean is, by the grace of God, I've had enough experience to see myself coming. Like, there go I. So to me, it's like, there go I. Like, I can see myself on the path. And so if you can see yourself on the path, you know where your pitfalls are. You know where you're going to succeed. You know what areas are strengths and weaknesses. So by the grace of God, by the peace and the whatever like that you want to equate that to, there go I. So it's really just like, do you have enough common sense to see yourself coming is really what that means. Like a biblical sense is like, because I've done enough good stuff and because I've done enough dumb stuff, I can kind of see what's coming now. So like when you feel yourself tilting, you know, by the grace of God, there go I. I'm just going to go sit on this couch right back here. I'll watch the market, but I'm not going to click buttons. You know, by the grace of God, there go I. I'm up 150 points on this trade, but I think that my target is 100 points higher. So don't just click out because of P&L. Don't just do whatever. Like, you know, you've seen what happens when you see your process out to the finish. So it goes both ways with that, but it's just more of a, you know, I've been around the block enough times to kind of know what this looks like. And so, you know, you don't need to do something different, like, or, you know, you've kind of got the experience. Just respect the experience, because you've paid your tuition, right? So why pay it again? You don't have to be a super senior. You don't have to go to, you know, 12th grade 15 times. You can just go to college and move on from that. And so it's just a reminder to, you know, to myself, to
that
other
you
people
know,
that I chat
you've
with, that
been here
you
before.
Know better.
You
yeah,
know,
you've
been
here
before. The way that I translate this in sort of like California woo language would be observer consciousness. Right.
That's
like
kind
I
of
have
looking,
like
yeah.
witness consciousness. Yeah. Like I can see myself if I have a kind of witness online, I can see the version of myself that's taking the trade, like, oh, you're nervous right now, or oh, this is happening, right? And there's this like separation that can happen that's really useful.
Is that why people always recommend having a camera on you when you trade? Like just having that maybe extra awareness of what you look like maybe helps you kind of see your path or whatever path you're going down.
Do people recommend that? That's interesting.
A lot of people do.
I mean, it's certainly a version of it.
Yeah, or taking notes with a notebook, right? Of like, okay, getting myself out of my only like my little head that I'm here taking action from. Like, can there be more space?
That's what I see the phrases as being like the most useful for, is that just give you a moment to like pop your head out of like up and take a breath, look around. It gets you out of the moment.
It is like a good, like, you know, whatever. Like in the kitchen, I had a chef that used to like,
bam.
You know, like, and whoa, like, and everyone would just stop and then like take a deep breath. Like it's
like a
that,
reset.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's lovely.
And I think that's important because literally if you don't reset sometimes, like in the next 30 seconds, and that's about all it takes in some of these markets, like a lot of bad things can happen. Like, yeah, you know, again, like moments away from self-destruction or destruction at any given turn, everyone. And that's like, that's the challenge of trading is it's all always on the line. It's just your choice of whether or not it is all on the line. Like the broker's not going to call you and say, you can't bet everything. Right. The casino's not going to tell you, you yeah, can't go all in, right? Like in poker, you can always push all the chips into the middle. You don't have to. Sometimes it's the best play. Sometimes it's a terrible play. And trading is very much like that. Like if you don't have that, like, whoa moment where you just like take a step back and go, I'm about to do something that could potentially be very dangerous, or if you're not self-aware enough to know what you're capable of. And that's for me, like, just to be like completely honest, like that, by the grace of God, there go I, to remind myself that like I'm more prone to that stuff. There's a lot of people like the Bankses of the world that are very disciplined. That is not one of my super strengths. That is one of my super weaknesses. And so I have to remind myself all the time of what I'm capable of. And part of that is being honest about, like, there I go, like about to jump off the cliff. Like, I see it. It's there. Are you going to walk off it or not? So
it's so good.
You know, I guess, what are we calling it? Flareisms. There you go.
I'm glad you brought that one up because that was the one I was actually going to ask you about specifically, was the, I know what I'm capable of, because I've heard that one a lot too. I do want to go back then. So you mentioned macro tactical as being like kind of a key inflection point in your trading journey. I didn't realize he was that important or that instrumental. Like, how much credit do you give him for like where you are right now?
Oh man. A lot. I would say, like, you know, like technicals, fundamentals, there's like the Frankenstein version. There's a lot of people that were, you know, part of that Frankenstein version, or the aha moment of like order flow, or the aha moment of like cool tech gained loss, and like finding some of that stuff, like Ox for technical analysis. Who, if you could ever get him on this podcast, that would be insane.
Ox,
ooh. See, like he was back from like the Kingdom days. He was in some of the other discords, not to be mentioned, but he is the one that showed me like the whole gained lost and how to find it and the blog and all of that stuff and how to hold trades and like how to honor work and stuff like that. So like Ox, from like a technical analysis perspective, that's like core to what I do, that I've built on to what is my version of it today. But like the emotional, just like common sense side, and like the, hey dummy, just trust yourself, like macro has just been, that conversation was just so pivotal of a turning point that like I will always remember it. And the way that we've then been able to have future conversations based on the rawness of that one moving forward has just like kind of been the impetus of like so many advancements along the way, of like having that person that like respects you enough to tell you the truth, and is also, you know, like a good enough person that you can kind of be honest with on the good, the bad, and the ugly, that really was like that. It's funny because like you could trade any line on a chart and probably find a way to be profitable. But if you can't get over the you versus you part and the fear part, or all of the things that go along with that, like it doesn't matter if you have edge. Yeah. And so like, that was just like such a big, big moment to be able to kind of like, go, oh wow, okay, like I need to start taking the emotional side, the mental side, the discipline side much more serious, and respecting the amount of, it's not just like get on a call and like pull up charts with buddies. Like this thing is much more than that, and the follow through to that, the execution side, you know, how important that actually was. And it sounds silly to say like, whoa, execution is important, but like it's easy to just like do a bunch of work and then show up and then just like do nothing, or do a bunch of work and then do a bunch of other things.
How many of us are smart enough that we were able to kind of give a 50% effort and like exceed? I know I was one of those. Like I didn't take much for me to be able to exceed my peers. And that's not going to bring success in trading. You need to bring everything.
I think like that's another thing macro is like super strong with too. It's just like always pushing the envelope, always pushing the group and like always reminding you that like there is an entire ocean of absolute megalodon sharks that are ready to eat your lunch if you don't take this nearly as seriously as they do. And, you know, I think a part of that comes from some of his connections to people at firms and things like that. But like, you know, again, like just you want to talk about a guy who like will just tell you the truth that you need to hear. And again, because ask me how I know, like, you know, he's had some of these high level conversations with these people. He's tripped and fallen. And he also, you know, spent enough time with some of us to respect the work enough to be like, hey, dude, what are you doing? So, yeah, I would say that, like, for sure was one of the bigger.
I had a very similar moment with Purdue where he had to sit me down and be like, dude, what are you doing, man? Do the fucking back testing. Get the work done so you have some fucking confidence in yourself. And it was that raw, like, sit down, like, what I needed to hear.
Purdue will say, I've heard that, too, he from him.
Yeah, he's good at that.
He is.
Yep.
What's, okay, Flary, I'm curious to hear, like, you know, you're talking about the emotional side. Okay, so you don't have a bunch of discipline, but clearly you have enough to be able to trade at some level and successfully. Like, how do you work with yourself when you're off? Or like, do you just step away? Do you have a process? Have you had any psychological kind of frameworks? You know, there's scripture as a resource, there's people. Like, what's your like psychological process that maybe people don't really know about?
Yeah, so I would say one great question, because it's I think a common struggle for most. I would gather that at least maybe it's hard for me to realize that there's a bunch of just like super disciplined people out there. But I think most people are probably on the other side of the spectrum of like more capable of mass destruction than less. And so the way I approach it is I don't want to just put guardrails. I don't want to play bumper bowling the entire time. Right. Cause I don't think that's conducive to like what would success look like. You don't bowl a 300 with bumper rails up and like, you know, call yourself a professional bowler. Like, but at some regard, like you have to be honest with yourself and say, okay, like I'm struggling in this area right now. And so I need to have, you know, like the daily stop loss, or, you know, a weekly stop loss, or, you know, three trades and I'm done for the day kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't personally think that that's like, again, conducive to like what real success looks like, in my opinion, based on the research that I've done. But that's okay for like, I have a problem right now. And I know that this is a weakness of mine. So what is like, I like to get analytical and just again, be honest, like I'm struggling in this space. So what things can I do like today to stop me from that mass destruction that's around the corner? Because there's only two types of traders. You either trade the open tomorrow or you don't. And so anything that I can do to make sure that I'm in the class of traders that get to trade the open tomorrow, that's what I need to do today, right? I need to go to the desk and implement that so that tomorrow, if I'm going to trade, I have those bumper rails ready to go. But I think that it's almost like recovery in a way, right? Like you have to go to the meetings like 5 days a week, right? In the beginning or something like that. But like maybe in your 10th year of recovery, like, you know, you're a sponsor and you're only going once a week or something like that. I don't know, maybe a bad analogy, but like you have to find a way to be able to get as close to back to what success should actually look like or looks like for you. And it likely, in my opinion, doesn't look like the bumper rails that you set up on day one. So I try to like build sort of this like safety net to make sure I don't do something stupid tomorrow, and then work in that safety net and like kind of achieve goals of like, I'm feeling confident in my risk management today, or I'm taking the trades that I wanted to, and then build from that back to this place of confidence in the process. Mm-hmm. So like emotionally, it's about like, what can I do today to stop it and feel like I know I have this like safety net, these bumper rails that are going to stop me from doing something too crazy, but you kind of have to like then drop them down, right? And see if you can actually
not hit them,
you know, bowl or whatever. Yeah. And I think like, so building back up to that is a big piece to me that I utilize, like systematically planning my recovery. Right. And then once you're kind of there, I think what you find, or what I found, is that it's about building a clear process, because if you have a very clear process, it's really easy to see when you're outside of it. Hmm. So, you know, if you don't, if your A, B, and C setups or your setup 1, 2, and 3 are kind of vague and like, yeah, maybe it was, that was a setup and maybe it wasn't, it's really easy to sort of like cop out and be like, well, I didn't skip that trade because it was kind of a setup. But like, if your setup is like, I have like, I've sent it to you, Kyle, like a 2-page document of what are the trades that I will take and what do they look like. I have pictures of what they look like and like a database of that. So if I skip a trade, it's really easy to go back and be like, okay, so why are we skipping trades now? And the feedback loop gets a little bit better. So it's one part like, I need to correct this right now. And what can I do today to make sure that tomorrow isn't the last day I trade? And then it's one part like building back up the confidence to trade back into your process, which I think it becomes like better defining your process. So maybe the reason I wasn't taking the trades that I was supposed to take is because my process wasn't clearly outlined. Right. Maybe the reason I was moving my stop so much is because I was, you know, undercapitalized for the size that I was trading, or I didn't know the stats on the setup. And so again, it's like, what do I need to do tomorrow to fix it? But then like, what is the actual fix, I think, is maybe the better way to say it, because usually the actual fix is what you need to work on. And the like, make sure I can trade tomorrow is the like immediate, like I need to do something, if that answers the question.
Yeah. Have you stepped away from it, from trading for periods, because you're just like, I need to go away and not touch it for a week or something, like I need to recover fully?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you've taken space.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, Fridays are like the worst. Doing something dumb on a Friday is probably like the max pain, because you just have that weekend and the markets are closed. But
You get the whole weekend to think about it. Yeah. Oh, but that's where M period kind of came from that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just don't do something dumb in the last 30 minutes of the day, but right. Or the week. 2024, January through say like February, I made an attempt to size up like relatively dramatically and just absolutely fell flat on my face. Mm. And I took most of March off. And it's funny, like it started this like downswing in a bunch of things. Like I would say from November to January was probably my best run of trading poker that I had. And, you know, so then I was like, okay, well, let's now see if I can size up. And one of the emotional struggles that I've gone through with trading is trading size, but then doing it still in my process, not looking at the P&L going up at a much bigger rate at, you know, like numbers that matter on a different level, even though they shouldn't. Right. And like not being able to just gamify, you know, this new size. And I like literally just failed, absolutely failed on it, lost a shit ton of money, and, you know, had to just sort of like take some time to decompress, be honest, deal with the fact that like, I'm not emotionally ready to trade the size that I tried to trade. Mm. I couldn't hold my trades to the correct exits. I couldn't not move my stop. I couldn't not tilt. And, you know,
and why is that? Is it because it was like outside of your window of tolerance in terms of the dollars you were working with?
Yeah, when you step up in size, like what does that look like? Is it usually a significant step up, or are you just trying to add like a contract here or there? Like every so many levels, a dollar threshold, I'll add a contract.
Yes, when doing it correctly, I would say, or like in a stair step gradual version. This was more of a like, I've been crushed. I'll do a poker analogy. So like I've been crushing the 1-3 buy-in, like the 1-3 limit game.
Yeah.
And I've built up enough bankroll where I'm just going to go take a shot, take a 10-20. So I didn't play 2-4. I didn't play 5-10.
You skipped some steps.
I just went to 10-20 because I was, you know, I was bankrolled for 10-20. I felt like I had the talent to play that level. You know, cause in trading, nothing changes except for, you know, the number that you click in on. And
that makes a huge difference, though.
it, you know, again, it made a difference to the fact that I was not able to perform. My like self stats on all the stuff was like way down, and I failed. I was not able to do the same thing that I was doing on a one lot that I was doing on a five, basically. To just like kind of simplify it. And, you know, that sucked. And again, like you got to go back and go, okay, you know, you just rebuild from where you were. And it oddly enough, you just go back to at least for me, like go back to what you were doing. And, you know, that still worked. I wasn't scared to do what I was supposed to do on that size or that level, and had to then say, okay, well, you know, that version of scaling up is not for you. So you must need to, you know, put the bumper rails on and go from one to like, you know, 15 micros, from 15 micros to two minis, to two minis, you know, like, and like have to be a little bit more systematic spreadsheet about how you're going to allocate risk and your R, and like do some more research on like what this feels like. And honestly, be honest with yourself on like, what did it feel like to take some of those losses, or like, mm-hmm. you know, how much of it was just variance? And you were just beating yourself up, and like, you know, because that just happens, right? I could have just sized up at the absolutely wrong time. And the beginning of the year historically is like a really bad time for me. I just like haven't ever really done well January, February, for whatever reason. If anything, I should probably have sized up in December, because December seems to be like my, you know, mystery month. Like Christmas is always good. I always win a poker tournament. I always like am on an upswing. But anyways, all that to be said, like that was a struggle. And I actually took a break for a while, withdrew a bunch of money, started low, and started to rebuild. And the funny thing is like that's when FTT came around. And, you know, I went on a 3-month run in FTT that was like the light at the end of the tunnel. Like you can be like a 7-figure trader. Like I made a lot of money with them and then didn't get it from them, which was a whole nother, you know, emotional bag to open.
You got some of it though, right?
I got a chunk, good. You know, good. Got a normal yearly salary from them, but they also kept multiples. So, I mean, again, it's, you just never know. Like it's just always an evolution too. So I think like having some version of like, okay, what are you struggling with today? Does it need to be fixed tomorrow? And yeah. If the answer is yes, do something about it. Put those bumper rails up. And then it's more like, okay, I'm struggling with this. I've got some safety nets in place, but what is the actual what is the actual answer? And what work do I need to go do in order to make this better? And, you know, again, like for sizing up, will I ever take that shot again? I'm confident that I will at some juncture. Will I do it in the same way during the same time and the same market dynamics? Probably not. And I learned some things from it. And, you know, I get to chalk that into the ask me how I know category when someone says I'm thinking about going from a 2-lot to a 10-lot.
Awesome. I'd also tell you too, it's not a failure if you learn something from it. So, I mean, don't beat yourself up too hard on it.
Yeah, we learned. And, you know, honestly, like I knew that after that, and I still beat myself up on it. So, you know, it's this game is challenging on so many different levels. And then like, you know, like, oh, there's levels to this shit. Well, like, you know, failing as a, you know, 1-lot trader and then failing as a 5-lot trader doesn't feel the same. And it should, because it's the same setups, the same game. But it doesn't. And, you know, the mind's ability to go, what was a $200 loss yesterday was a $2,000 loss today, but it's the same. You did the same thing. You just had a, you know, a multiplier on it. It's not the same. And
you just got to pretend it's pesos.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, but the real answer is it is the same. And so finding your way between like how you really feel and how you should feel and how you need to feel in order to be successful on the journey from where you were to where you potentially tried to be and failed, you know, is kind of part of that process and
essential, right? Actually, for a trader, like that's an essential part of the process that I think a lot of people don't really talk about is really how to scale up in a way that's not going to blow you out. That's still going to be within reason, maybe a little bit of a stretch, but not freak you out.
Well, and quitting before you completely blow out is a whole nother thing too. Like, I mean, again, ask me how I know I've blown several accounts, but like, you know, also stopping at a level where you can go back, like you don't just go play 10-20 and then blow your entire bankroll so that you can't play 1-3 anymore. You know, take your shot at 10-20 and you get your butt kicked, and then you take your small bankroll and you go back to having a normal size bankroll and play 1-3 and build it back up. And then you systematically shot take with the information that you've gathered from your last attempt. And that's sort of the stage that I'm on.
You've beaten this game. You can beat this game, the level that you're at right now. You've proven that. You've got plenty of history. So, yeah, just as long as you can still go back there tomorrow,
Yeah. And I think like we talked about this before too, but like there's a piece of it that like becomes actually more emotionally challenging when you've seen enough pocket of success, like whether it's just emotionally or statistically, where you go, wow, I know what I'm capable of. Like you can just extrapolate that 3 month run out, you know, to, you know, 12 months, 2 years, whatever. And then imagine what the scaling would look like. And you go, wow, I've executed at a level of excellence that I'm smart enough to know what that looks like if I could do that over a 2 year run. Mm-hmm. And then when you start failing and you know what you're capable of, that level, I honestly is probably one of the more challenging levels. I would say like early failures just felt like part of the game. Being good enough to know better or to know what you're capable of is a whole different level of failure that like in some way makes you want to quit more, but also like makes you never want to quit because you're just like, how could I ever quit this when I know what I have in here is enough to do X, Y, and Z.
When your head is telling you don't click the button and you still watch yourself click the button, like those moments. Yeah.
So anyways, not an uncommon struggle, and very much all of that falls into the ask me how I know category.
Well, okay. So this is the Humanity of Trading podcast series. And what is something that you've learned about yourself through trading, about your humanity?
Do you have a definition of humanity, a California definition of humanity?
Let's see. It's a good question. I think it's like the core of just something about who you are in your core. You know, when we pull back the onion layers of personality or ego, or I mean, maybe that could also be part of it, but like something in the essence of who you are as a person.
So the desire to be right is probably one of the biggest, I would say, challenges or hurdles that I've personally had to try to like overcome, and is one of those, you know, by the grace of God, there go I kind of things for me.
Are there any other tips or tricks for dealing with that one? Just asking for a friend.
Just be right.
Yeah, just be right more.
That's what I tried. It didn't work.
You know, the math of trading has been a big friend in that space of like really just looking at it from a long game perspective and not caring about like this small sample size. Like, you know, in theory, I'm supposed to win. I have EV if I just keep doing what I'm doing. And, you know, as long as I keep doing what I'm doing inside of my process, like this should work over the long run. And if that run of variance goes longer than it's supposed to, then having to go back and, you know, do some backtesting again on whether or not your edge is still consistent or existent. But, you know, just like wanting to be right, or wanting to call a trade to somebody, like I just think so much energy is spent in that space that like just does not matter. And I almost like find myself like trying to, maybe force is a bad word, but like embrace being wrong in a way that like like, hey, I like today, I think I would like today in whatever I said, hey, this is a, you know, a potential fail to gain setup, and it got blown out. Like, I don't care. There's an old part of me that would be like, oh yeah, but like, and trying to like rationalize, like, you know, this, like, oh, you know, and there's just no point. Like, it's mental gymnastics to just like care about whether or not you were right in a game where like most successful people are wrong more than they're whatever, like the, you know, best loser wins, you know, mentality. And I think that's that's like a big, like, strip the onion away, like have to be okay with that. Like that still, like
you're learning how to be wrong.
Yeah. It's like a tough chew, right? Like it is not easy. And I think the space sort of like amplifies that in a way, like the FinTwit, the, you know, Discord and YouTube version of this world.
You want to get that screenshot out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the whole screenshot, the trade before you exit the trade kind of mentality. Right. And I think again, that's why I like a lot more of the teaching side of things of like, this is the setup. Like you have to go figure out like how this fits in your landscape, because it's nothing wins 99.9% of the time. And the more, like the sooner you can kind of get over that, the better you'll be. And it's not easy. It's not easy for me to just accept. It's like you have to release that it's not you that's wrong. It's just like, it's just that part of the variance of your version of a process. And if your version of variance runs long enough statistically that you think you need to go back and analyze it, then you just have to do it. And I think, again, like that math based, like crutch of it, and it's not even a crutch, like, because it's actually the answer, is what kind of frees you from the like, yeah, okay, so that one was an L. Like,
here's the thing. You just got to redefine what's right. What's right is take trades that you have a statistical edge on. It doesn't matter what the outcome is. It's still right to execute it, right?
What's right is not one trade that I put in there or shared with somebody or took personally, right? What's right is like the 50, right, over the long run of a systematical process, whatever. So, you know, that fear of being right or care about being right, I think is a big one. As unhealthy as it is, like the gamification of points, mm-hmm. money is still a struggle. Obviously, it was a struggle in attempting to size up. And it's unhealthy, but it's also necessary in a way.
What's unhealthy specifically, you mean for you?
I think the unhealthy part is like the disassociate, like it's a healthy disassociation from money, but it's also unhealthy in a way. Yeah. You know, like you start seeing groceries at the grocery store and Q points, kind of
right, yeah.
spin on it. But, you know, I had a trade the first week in office where Trump took office, which was last week or the week before.
20th, I think was inauguration day. Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
I had some longs that I entered on Tuesday because Monday was a holiday in the options market. And I round tripped most of them. And
I think we talked about that sequence. Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah. But the whole point was I wore that, like the trade was it should be a bullish week. And if Friday, literally the video, like the little meme video I put together, was Friday, if we open at all time highs, and it's like the scene from Margin Call where the guy goes, is that even possible? and he was like, yeah, it's possible. So like the whole plan was to carry this trade till Friday. And if we open at all time highs, the potential for a blow off, you know, move above all time highs in SPY was huge. And I was there for it. I wore the trade through thick and thin throughout the week. And unfortunately, DeepSeek decided to launch on Friday. And the market was no match for that. And, you know, I didn't round trip the entire trade, but I round tripped a good chunk of the profits. And but being okay with that healthy disassociation of money of like, I'm more happy that, you know, I had to cut a winning trade that was up significantly more, but I wore it through the thesis, the process, the idea, and to the levels. But that's not always super easy to do. And trying to find that balance of like a healthy disassociation of like, I was up X thousands of dollars and now I'm not, versus like I traded the trade the way I was supposed to and exited and cut it at break even plus a little bit. And that was actually correct. Yeah. And there's some balance within the truth lies within or something like that. And I think that's like a constant battle. And I think probably one of the things that you have to sort of master in the version of sizing up, because those numbers get much more relevant, even though they're not supposed to. So fear of being wrong, fear of being right, you know, sort of like fear of healthy disassociation to like, what is the actual dollars and points and what does this mean? Like not being able to watch mortgage go away in one tweet, not watching, you know, a month's salary go down in one, you know, DeepSeek decides to launch on Friday trade, but still be able to manage the trade correctly inside your process and analyze those things. So like, I think that takes some version of a healthy but also unhealthy disassociation of money, and unhealthy from the sense that like it's damn near impossible to then sit on a Saturday and go, damn, that was a month's worth of work. You know, but it was also about to be 6 months worth of work,
right.
Potentially. And so, you know, to have both sides of that coin, to know that the next time that trade presents itself, to be able to correctly hold and DeepSeek doesn't put out information and the market does its Friday bull run all-time high thing, and you know, and actually be able to hold it till close on Friday and watch those options go from, you know, up 300% to up, you know, 1,000% or even potentially more where that trade had the potential to go. It's a dance. And so I think that's like, that's a big one. And I think also just like the way that this game truly can strip you to the core and show you your true, like, your true faults is like none other, you know, like there's two things in life that have shown me, who you really are, and it's trading and addiction. Like those two things, you know, when you go through some version of recovery, which I have, and maybe we get into that in some other podcast, but like, there's no more raw moments of like who you are, where you've screwed up and what you need to do better than trading and like saying, hey, I'm going to get better. And I want to do better in some version of addiction. And I think those are tough conversations to have with yourself. And you know, just they're, in my opinion, I don't think they're ever going to go away. From all of the veteran traders that I've talked to, on any version of the journey, like you're always going to deal with some version of demons and whatever version of yourself is causing pain. And I think it's something that you just have to learn to be okay with and not, like, to your point, Kyle, like beat yourself up so much, but like try to find progress in them. And, you know, ask me how I know. And, you know, it's just like, it's so easy to quit. Mm-hmm. And I think you just have to carry that version of yourself that just says, like, I am not going to quit. Like, there is no version of this that doesn't end in me pushing through the other side of this. And if I do quit, I have to be like, I have to get to a place where, like, it's either a small break or like, I just know that this isn't it anymore because I want to go do something else, or that like the pain of this journey is just more than I want to take on for the reward of this journey. And I would say that answer still is, it's asymmetrical, right? So the reward is still very much outweighing the pain, that may change one day. Right. And sometimes, like, you know, that can change really quickly. And that, again, it's all at risk every time you click the button.
Yeah.
Every time. And that's why this thing is so hard, because that answer, like, you could ask me that right now and tomorrow I could click the button and the answer would be completely different as soon as the results of that trade came in. And I think, like, you just have to kind of be okay with what this feels like and honest with yourself throughout all those journeys, because it hurts sometimes to, like, have to be honest with yourself about who is this moron clicking buttons? Who is this person who just lost that much money? Who is this person that was so scared to take this trade or to that clicked out early and watched everyone, you know, crush, you know, this trade? And it hurts on both sides of it, being wrong and right. And that's like the hard part. It's like, you can be right wrong and you can be wrong wrong. And it's really hard to just be right right. And everything in between hurts, and you just have to be like okay with some of the part of the journey, if that makes sense.
Well, speaking of the journey then, I mean, the last question then I have for you is, I mean, you kind of spoke to how trading can challenge you and like touch on you personally, but would you still do it again? Like, are you happy with the way trading has impacted your life? Do you think it's made you a better person?
I would say net better, yes. Like, I've learned more about myself through this process than probably anything. Yeah, short of like going through some version of recovery. I don't know. Like, I've seen enough to know that it's, the reward is worth the risk. But I think, like, if you were to like rewind a few years, that would be a much tougher, if I could go back a few years with like this mindset, like of the pain, if I could take the pain back a few years, but not have seen what the reward could potentially be, I think it would be a much closer answer. Like, you'd be pushing much thinner equity, from a life equity perspective? And the answer would probably be close to no. And so, like, I think that's why it's so important to make better decisions early on. And that whole conversation we had about, like, day one me, what would I do? And a lot of that would be around risk and avoiding some of these pitfalls. And I think that's why a lot of my heart around, like, helping or teaching is to, like, just, like, dude, you don't have to do all this. Like, you don't have to. And everyone gets told that, and they still go do it anyways. And you know, through the war, you know, whatever, the you know, whatever.
But, you know, every person who's told me not to do something and I still went and did it, like, I at least still hear them after I'm doing it or as I'm doing it.
But I would say the answer is yes. Like, there's been much more net positives. I've seen enough and had enough success to, you know, to say it was worth the journey. But it's not like this is also me saying, like, dude, this is not for the faint of heart. Like, mm-mm. you will feel, terrible. You will feel the greatest you've ever felt. Like, it will take you through the entire mm-hmm. parabola of the journey. Like, the whole Gaussian curve you will experience from, you know, complete success to complete failure, and questioning everything in between. And the answer lies within. Like, it's just balancing that journey. And if you can't ever find a place where you think you can control, you know, the emotions and build a process and do the actual amount of work that it's going to take, then yeah, it's for sure not going to be worth it, because the amount of mirror moments that you're going to just inevitably have will be far outweighed by, you know, the success. And some people, you know, like, just don't have to experience that. God bless them, right? They just, like, go on an upswing and they get to learn the tough lessons from the top. And that wasn't my journey. So maybe this story sounds different than if you had someone else on here.
I think that's rare, but...
Yeah, I would say so.
But yeah, it's just, like, I also enjoy it. Like, I enjoy the challenge. So, like, there's probably just, like, no part of me that would ever just give up, because it's just not in my DNA. And
giving up is admitting that you can't do it. And I just, I don't feel that's true.
But that doesn't mean that this thing hasn't broken me to some level on any given weekend.
right.
Like, it just has. Yeah. Right. And it has. And I'm not God's gift to trading in any realm, like, at all, not even close. There's infinite number of people that have made infinite more dollars and have done better and have better processes and better setups and more edge and more confidence. But, like, this is my journey, and everybody's journey is different. Yeah. And this thing has, through that, at times completely broken me, like, completely. But there's also a part of me that just will never give up. Like, I just don't have that piece of me that will just say it's always going to go away. There will, like, I know enough and have done enough work that, like, I think it would be just, like, a shame at this juncture to just walk away from trading, given, like, if tomorrow was the last day. Yeah. Right? If tomorrow I click the button and blew it all, you know, it might take me longer to come back. I might come back in a different way, or I might, you know, do it differently. But, like, there's not going to ever be at this juncture some version of no, like, I'm done. But to get to that was certainly not easy. So, yeah, in a long way to answer your question, like, yeah, it's definitely worth it. I would definitely continue to do it. And I'm grateful that I have gone down this road, but...
Follow at your own risk.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. I've got the scars to prove it, the t-shirt to fucking prove it too. So,
well, Flary, it's been so awesome talking to you. Like, I've wanted to talk to you for months, actually, because when you say these things, when I hear you on podcasts, I'm like, yeah, I gotta ask him about that. And we haven't actually had that much engagement. I know we're in, like, a group thread together and stuff, but I always end up feeling encouraged, like, in my own path, right? And I'm currently taking a break from futures because I am just needing that. But I'm like, after talking to him, like, maybe I will open some charts and look again at futures. Like, I'm maybe not quite there yet, but there's just something that's so encouraging. Like, I'm reminded of things that I already know in talking to you or hearing you. And that's refreshing.
Honestly, sometimes that's the best gift. Some of the mentors I've worked with have given me is just encouragement, or just making me feel like I'm not alone, or that I have the, you know, abilities.
Yeah.
We all need that macro moment at some point it happens. And that's, like, sometimes it's an emotional turning point. Sometimes it's a edge turning point. And I think both are probably necessary at some juncture. So, but this was fun. I didn't know what to expect. I'd seen a few of them, but like, honestly, I'm glad I came into this like relatively, you know, unscripted. Yeah. It's not like you guys gave me a list of questions like, be prepared to talk about this, how much it hurts.
Right,
so,
right.
This, yeah. And you know, again, at the end of the day, like, yeah, you need to be good at trading to some extent. Like, you have to have some version of edge or even like a line consistently drawn on your chart. But like, without a lot of this humanity piece of it, it's like, you're just not going to make it. So yeah. The sooner you listen to more of these shows and listen to the people like be raw and real about like, what is the humanity of trading? What is the humanity of yourself personally, people around you that you respect? Like, the quicker you can kind of stop going and, you know, getting broken down and looking in the mirror and all that stuff, because it really just is something that has to happen if you want to see some version of success and growth in it. Like, it is rewarding to put something behind you to some extent, but also, by the grace of God, there go I, like, you know, you're still capable of it, but it is rewarding to sort of like win these small little challenges that come along the way. And a lot of that is in this humanity of trading, humanity of yourself. And trading is just such a beautiful game because it can break you and make you like within seconds of each other. And you can quickly forget about the wins, and the losses always stick and sting a little bit longer. Right. So it's not uncommon.
Every poker player has a bad beat story.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you always remember the bad beats. You never remember the
one out.
On the river.
Yeah. Well, man, that was a much better outro than I had written. So thank you, Flary.
Thank you for opening up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for ending the show too, better than I ever could have. Remember, show our panelists some love. Click on those links in the show notes. Visit Band of Traders podcast. You never miss a new episode. And we will be back soon with another exciting guest to pepper with questions. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a great day. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.